with.
Lokapalaha.
Lokapalaha.
The demigods.
The
demigods.
Mamsyante.
Will consider.
Will consider.
Esham.
Esham.
Of these kings.
Of these kings.
Striyaha.
Striyaha.
Wives.
Wives.
Adirajam.
Adirajam.
The original king.
The original king.
Chakra Ayudam,
Chakra Ayudam,
bearing the disc weapon.
Bearing the disc weapon.
Tat,
Tat,
his.
His.
Yashaha,
Yashaha,
reputation.
Reputation.
Udarantyaha,
Udarantyaha,
carrying on.
Carrying on.
Translation. When the king travels all over the world, other kings, as well as the demigods, will offer him all kinds of presentations. Their queens will also consider him the original king who carries in his hands the emblems of club and disc and will sing of his fame, for he will be as reputable as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you can repeat. When the king travels all over the world, other kings, as well as the demigods, will offer him
all kinds of presentations.
Their queens will also
consider him the original king
who carries in his hands
the emblems of club and disc
and will sing of his fame.
For he will be as reputable
as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
As far as reputation is concerned, King Prithu is already known as the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Hori Rajam means the original king. The original king is Narayana, or Lord Vishnu. People do not know that the original king, or Narayana, is actually the protector of all living entities. As confirmed in the Vedas, Ego Bahunam Yo Vridati Kamam, Katupanishad 2.2.13. Actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is maintaining all living entities. The king, or Naradeva, is his representative. As such, the king's duty is to personally supervise the distribution of wealth for the maintenance of all living entities. If he does so, he will be as reputable as Narayana. As mentioned in this verse, Tad Yashaha, Prithu Maharaj was actually carrying with him the reputation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he was actually reigning over the world in that capacity. So, Asmain Ripala Kila Tatra Tatra Banim Harishyanti Salokapalaha Mamasyante Isham Striya Hari Rajam Chakra Yudam Tadyasha Udarancha. So, Om Gana Tadandasha Gananjana Shlakya Chakshur Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in the Western world, we become a little frightened when we hear about kings having so much power. And as far as the kings that we have here in Europe now, we have some kings, like Denmark has a king or queen. They're all just, and the Great Britain too, they're all just called figureheads. In other words, they do some formalities, they receive people, but they have no power. Of course, they have a lot of money. I mean, how much money does it take to maintain Buckingham Palace every year? Millions and millions, tens of millions of euros or pounds. So it's actually considered very much liberated in Europe that we've gotten rid of all these kings, isn't it? Because, I mean, basically because the kings were exploiting. So when we bring up to people the conception that we should have like kings, people get very upset with this because they like democracy. Now, democracy has its benefits. What is the benefit of democracy? Well, there's checks and balances in democracy. Of course, Prabhupada would often call democracy demoncracy. The reason being is that in democracy, you have basically all the Kali Yuga people, which is us, Kaloshudra Sambhava, voting. And when they vote for someone based upon not religious principles, they base upon how much sense gratification the person promises them. That's the voting. Of course, in the West, nowadays, we don't really have a democracy. Because a real democracy would mean that everyone would decide the laws, like they had in ancient Greece. In ancient Greece, in Athens, for example, all the citizens would vote every day on the laws. Of course, that was pretty horrible, too, because the laws would change every day. You can imagine that, everybody get together and vote, you know, on the laws. And, of course, in Athens, it's not that everybody was a citizen. They had many slaves, and I hate to say it to you ladies, but the ladies were not considered citizens. Only the free men could vote. It was a really chauvinistic, racistic society. They had a lot of slaves they brought in from other places. So this was a problem. But it was a bunch of shudras. I mean, you know, Greece was not exactly a brahminical society. It's not to criticize the Greek people, but it's just they weren't. I mean, the Greek people and the Turkish people were kicked out of India. That's described, you know, they were driven out of India. Like most of us, most of the Europeans were actually the stock that was driven out of India. So they were not the most pious people. So in the modern day, we have what's called a representative democracy. It's not a true democracy. Representative means we vote for people who will represent us. I mean, basically all of Western Europe is like that. It's a representative democracy in America and Australia and all what we call the first world countries. You ever heard that expression before? First world countries. And then there's the third world countries, you know, the poor third world countries. There's so much discrimination, racism, and nationalism, and all that other stuff. So in other words, we vote on someone based upon how much they promise us sense gratification or how good they look. You know, if you have a politician who looks really ugly, you probably never get elected, even if he was very pious. Isn't it? Of course, in India, it's a different scene. We're not going to talk about India right now because we have someone here from India who will argue with us. So it's basically the Shudras electing Shudras, the greater Shudra. And of course, it's not as bad as communism. In communism, it's basically complete Shudras. And in democracy, you know, representative democracy, it's like mixed Shudras and, you know, have a little Vaishyas there. Because the Vaishyas actually control the business people, not the real Vaishyas. Because a real Vaishya, according to the Bhagavad Gita, is someone, Krishi Gauracha Vanijan, Vaishya Karma Swabhavajan, a real Vaishya is someone who protects cows. But you have the business people who control the Shudras who vote for the president or the prime minister or the parliament. Because the business, especially with the media nowadays, you know, you have the media means the internet, television, and all those other nights, you know, the mobile phone and everything like that. They're controlling you, the business people are controlling you to vote for the person who would be the best for their particular business interests. So it's not such a good system. In other words, you're being exploited. Economically, and every other way, you're being exploited. So, but the king system has a problem too, where you have someone with absolute authority. That's also very problematic, as we've seen in many different countries, like in Syria, for example, where there was Assad who had absolute authority. Of course, now he's fighting a whole revolution against himself, and there's so many other problems there too. But That's a problem, because when you have absolute authority, as they say, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Prabhupada actually had a very interesting expression about absolute authority. He said, if you go to Lanka, you'll become Ravana. Everybody should think about that for a second. In other words, if you have a high position, then you actually develop demoniac qualities automatically, practically, in Kali Yuga. That's actually quite interesting. And even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he talks about one of the causes of anarthas. Anarthas means unwanted things in the heart, you know, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. And he says one of the causes of anarthas are the byproducts of bhakti. In other words, as you progress in bhakti, you get more profit, adoration, distinction, power. I mean, for example, you become temple treasurer, then after that you become the temple commander, after that president, after that you become GBC, you become guru. There's nowhere to go from there. You know, only God. And that position is already taken. So when you actually get higher and higher positions due to your devotional service, you know, people respect you, then you develop more anarthas, if you're not careful. Mm. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about this. He says anarthas can be caused by sinful activities, pious activities, offenses against Vaishnavas, or the byproducts of bhakti. And so we see even in our Krishna consciousness movement, people have taken a high position and then it goes to their head. I mean, it's hard to avoid that. For example, if you happen to be a guru, then you get a book written about yourself every year. Right? What's that called? Vyas Puja book. With pictures of yourself, people telling you how nice you are, how spiritual you are. I mean, it really goes to the head, isn't it? So instead of reading Prabhupada's books, you read your Vyas Puja book every day. And so that can be very problematic in one's spiritual life. Or just like you go someplace, especially in India, and people bathe your feet. Pretty good. And you go someplace and people give you whatever food you want to eat. You go someplace and people even give you a donation for eating prasad at their house. And so pretty good. Pretty good business. Anyway, so therefore, you know, one develops this mentality of pride in the heart. And so it's very, very dangerous. So whether one is a king, whether one is a guru, or anyone with an absolute position, there's a great danger in that position. So how to avoid that? Well, let's take a hint from the Vedic system. The Vedic or Varnashram system is a system of checks and balances. Like here you have a king, King Prithu. Of course, King Prithu was perfect. We're not criticizing him. But the kings would always have a system of checks and balances, and those were the brahmanas. And the brahmanas could correct the king. The king was always taking advice from the brahmanas, and if the king didn't take advice from the brahmanas could even kill the king. Like in the case of Vena. An interesting story about King Vena that's in the Bhagavatam. That King Vena's father was named Anga. And King Vena was such a nasty kid that he used to kill his friends when he played with them. He used to go out with, you know, let's say 20 or 30 friends to play, and he would come back alone. And his mother would say, you know, where's your friends? And he said, I killed them. So his father wasn't so happy. But his father said, this is a terrible son. But then he said, wow, he's a nice son. And he says, he's a nice son because he's given me an opportunity to get the hell out of here. You know, just take sannyas and just get out of this kingdom. Because running a kingdom is a big headache, isn't it? I mean, sometimes you become envious of a king, but a real king, all day long, they're having to deal with all these problems. In the traditional Vedic system, every citizen would have a right to go to the king to make a complaint. I'll tell a story about that. It's interesting. There's a story in the Ramayana about that. One time a dog made a complaint to Lord Ram. You know this story? You know this story, because he's from India. So, there was a dog at the gate of the palace, you know, Lord Ram's palace in Ayodhya. And Lakshman said, there's a dog here. And Lord Ram said, let him in. And the dog made a complaint. And the dog said, this Brahmin has been beating me. You heard this story before? You probably heard it. The Brahmin has been beating me. And then they called for the Brahmin. And Lord Ram said, what? Have you beaten this dog? And the Brahmin said, yes, I was hungry. Because I was hungry. Not that he would eat the dog. But he was, you know, when you're hungry, you get in a bad temper, isn't it? The blood sugar goes down. So he said, I beat the dog. And Lord Ram said, what should we do with this Brahmin to punish him? So in other words, he was so responsible that even a dog had an opportunity to go to the king and make a complaint. What to speak of a human being? And so, anyway, there's some discussion how to punish this Brahmin, and nobody could figure out the punishment, and the dog suggested the punishment. The dog said, you should punish this Brahmin by making him temple president. Is Keshav? I don't want to scare anyone away. So that everyone was saying, what is this? You're rewarding the person for doing something sinful? And they couldn't understand why the dog was suggesting that. And then Lord Ram said, ask the dog, you know, he'll explain the whole thing. And then the dog said, yes, the reason I'm a dog is that in the last life I was temple president. Because I treated people harshly. And therefore, you know, I had to take the percentage of the karma of everyone in the temple, because they weren't following the regulated principles too strictly. Then I had to become a dog. So, that's an interesting story. And actually, even Prabhupada said about the GBC. He said if the GBC makes a mistake, he gave the example of Vidura. Vidura actually previously was Yamaraj. And he said, Yamaraj made a mistake by punishing this Mandavya Muni to be pierced by a lance. Because when he was young, he actually pierced an insect with a piece of grass. And he said, he made that mistake, so he was cursed to become a Shudra in his next life. He said, Prabhupada did similarly, if one has a position of GBC and makes a mistake, then his next life he has to become a Shudra. Okay, see you all in my next life, anyway. So the point is, the king had to be very responsible, had to hear from every, it was a headache to be a king. So getting back to the story of Vena. So Vena, he was very cruel, and his father said, this is very good, it gives me an excuse to just get out of here and just become, you know, a sadhu, go to Govardhan and just chant Hare Krishna. Sometimes we think like that too. We look for excuses. Of course, each time we look for an excuse, Prabhupada says you can't use that excuse. Because when we're serving Krishna, even a position of responsibility, so many headaches. But Prabhupada gave the example that we take headaches, and those headaches are purifying. Prabhupada was talking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj one time. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, there's so many headaches, so much anxiety, I can't even hear my rounds properly sometimes. And Prabhupada said, yes, me too. So the point is, by taking responsibility for Krishna, we get purified. It's not like material responsibility, material things that cause us anxiety, that contaminate us. So in any case, this king, Anga, he left, and he left Vena in charge, because Vena was the only son. That's called the law of primogeniture, which means the oldest son becomes the next king. That's interesting. Even in India, you had something like that with Gandhi and Sanjay and everything like that, right? There was a whole dynasty for a while. Even the Congress Party is like a dynasty, right? Even Sonia, who was born in Italy, just because she's a member of the same family. Pretty crazy. So, don't quote me on that. So Vena was left in charge of the kingdom, and then he began to declare himself to be the supreme lord, stopping the brahmanas from performing sacrifices, and then ultimately the brahmanas killed him. Not with a knife or a sword or bow and arrows or anything, but they killed him by chanting the mantra. So you see, the checks and balances are there in society. So which is very important with the king, so that people will not become corrupt. So the point is, how can we do that in our society and avoid becoming corrupt? You know, this is an interesting point. As we mentioned before, as we progress, there's a tendency to become proud, or the tendency, as we get more and more positions in our Krishna conscious movement, to become proud and become almost like Ravana. I've seen that happen in many cases. Well, the solution is also the checks and balances. What are the checks and balances in Krishna consciousness society? That's the association of devotees. As Rupa Goswami states in the Upadeshamrita, Guyamakyati Prachiti. In other words, the Vaishnavas should be engaged in loving exchanges. The Dati Pratigranati, isn't it? So, the famous verse, the devotees should engage in giving gifts, accepting gifts, but the most important of those loving exchanges is revealing the mind in confidence and being able to hear from others about one's spiritual life. As soon as we become isolated, in other words, we isolate ourselves from the other Vaishnavas. Prabhupada gave an example one time. There was a devotee who was chanting by themselves. Well, the devotees were all chanting together. There was one devotee like 100 meters away chanting. Prabhupada said, you know, he's going to have spiritual difficulty. Not simply because he was 100 meters away, but because the devotee had that mentality of being separate from the other devotees. So therefore, the Sangha of devotees, all of us need to have close friends in Krishna consciousness who we can reveal our minds to and whom we can serve. Many times we have this conception that we can only reveal our minds and we can only serve our spiritual master. But we should develop the conception of developing close relationships with all the Vaishnavas and serving all the Vaishnavas. Not just being Kanishta in the sense of serving the deities on the altar or even just serving the spiritual master. That's also Kanishta attitude. But of developing these relationships with all the Vaishnavas. We have a society, that Sangha, Satsangha, our society. And in this way, we'll always be safe from these impediments in devotional service. And one of the ways, of course, Krishna also gives away, Lord Chaitanya gives away, in the Shikshastaka. Amanina Manadena. Everybody knows that verse? Chananapi, Sunajena, Thorapi, Srishna. Actually, there's two different versions of that verse. Thoraiva and Thorapi. You understand? Actually, Prabhupada quotes it both ways. Thoraiva Srishna, Amanina Manadena. By serving others, or offering respects to others, our society should be a society where we render service to each other. And that doesn't mean that we only serve devotees who are more advanced, we serve devotees, all devotees. I mean, I'll give you a practical example. in my own life. I've been speaking about this as I've been traveling around the world. That recently I was in Mayapur, staying in Keshava Madhava's flat. He's my landlord. I think he charges me too much, but anyway, that's my. He's a Vaishya. So anyway, so I was staying in his flat at Mayapur. And during the GBC meetings, and the GBC meetings take up many hours a day. But then I heard this one devotee had cancer and she was getting ready to die. Her name was Manarupa. And she was the wife of one of my friends, Prahlad Narasimha. So then I made a commitment every day to go and read to her from the Chaitanya Charitamrita or Krishna book. And she's this, you know, regular devotee, a disciple of one of my god brothers. So I took made a commitment to do some service for her. And all the time I was in Mayapur, it was actually the most ecstatic thing I did. It was, you know, I experienced more ecstasy than going in the temple room. And of course, more ecstasy than the GBC meeting. That's called a no-brainer, but anyway. But it was, and my taste for hearing and chanting increased dramatically, and I became a little humble, not very humble, but you know, got more humility. And I actually thanked her, and I thanked her husband for the opportunity for allowing me to do that. In fact, they thanked me, and I said, no, thank you for allowing me to render this service. So that's really how we avoid these anarthas, just by serving the other Vaishnavas. Just like in our temple, in our community in North Carolina, we've set up many what we call V-care groups, Vaishnava care groups. I don't know if any of you have read about this on the internet. There's one nice devotee. Her name is Sangeeta. She's actually a hospice nurse, and she helped us set up these groups of different devotees in different parts of the community where we meet regularly and we discuss how to care for devotees, how to serve devotees. They're very nice. So when devotees are getting sick or something, there's always many devotees visiting them in the hospital. Or in a hospice. Hospice means where someone's getting ready to die. And sometimes there's so many devotees, the devotee says, leave here, there's too many of you here. It was actually one funny story. We had one of my god brothers who really recently passed away. And so many devotees were there in the hospice. He said to them, I know you're all waiting for me to die. It was actually quite humorous. It was because they were all watching. When's it going to go? But so we had maybe like 10 devotees with him, like full time, 24 hours a day, serving him. And if someone goes to the hospital, it's the same thing. Or someone's struggling financially, the devotees get together and help them. And not only will this keep us from developing the anarthas, if we do this, serving the Vaishnava, Mahatseva, Mahorvi Muktes, this will also bring many people to the Krishna consciousness movement. Because the reason people join religious societies, many people join nowadays, is because of social networking, because people have a need for society, friendship, and love. You know, that's a basic human need. And many other religions have realized that. I mean, many other religions make their devotees by being friendly, visiting people in the hospital. And when we don't do that, we lose people. I mean, I've lost some disciples, like in Fiji, for example, which is part of my GBC zone. I've lost some disciples because when they went to the hospital, no devotee visited them. And the Christians visited them. And they thought, wow, Christians are so nice. And they became a Christian. I mean, if they become a good Christian, there's nothing wrong with that. But the point is that people definitely have that need for care. And sometimes we are so transcendental, or we think we're so transcendental, that we're not humans anymore. We become like transcendental robots. Like the Matrix or something like that. You know, computers, transcendental computers. You're not the body. You know, let's say it's a brahmachari in the temple and he's really sick and he's in pain. Then we just go up to him and say, you're not the body, Prabhu. You're not those teeth that are hurting, you know. You don't need to go to a dentist, just chant Hare Krishna. So, and sometimes it's like that. So basically, yes, we need to develop a society of caring for each other. And then you'll see many people will join. You won't have any financial problems here anymore. It's very nice. It's a very simple method. And Prabhupada himself said that. Yadati pratiganati guyamakyati prichati bhunkte bhojyate charva. Prabhupada himself said, by these six loving exchanges, our movement grows. Very interesting. Our movement grows and people stay in the movement rather than having a revolving door in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, revolving door, you know, in they go, then after a few years, out they go. Like that. It's like the bees in a hive. You know how the bees deal with each other in a hive? You know what a hive is? Hives are like where they have a whole bunch of bees that make honey. So you got all these worker bees there. But as soon as the worker bees can't work anymore, they get kicked out of the hive and they fall to the ground. So we can't be like that now. I mean, you realize that more and more as you get older, like most of us are getting. Some of you are not getting older. Like Gopinath's still the same age. He's having a second childhood. But you realize that more and more, you know, we need this care between the Vaishnavas. So we need it. It'll attract people. It'll keep us from becoming too proud, autocratic. It solves a lot of different problems in our society. So here you have King Prithu, and it was described in the previous verse about King Prithu. He just treated all the living entities in his kingdom as like his children. You know, that's actually an important point. Praja, those who were born. And certainly we see that in the example of Lord Ram, we see that in the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira. So this is the key to our success, the key to our success in leadership, and key to success to bringing people into the Krishna consciousness movement. So, any questions or comments? Yeah.
I have a old grandmother, and she's dying, and she has always taken care of other people. And now she's saying that nobody takes care of me. When she was taken to this daycare when my relatives went to holiday. So, is this more important than to go see her and be with her than being in the temple?
Well, I mean, you should go to the temple too. Where is she in Helsinki too, or
no? Actually, not
far away. Yeah. Well, you could do both. I mean, go to the temple sometimes and see her, read to her. I mean, she's coming to the point of leaving her body soon, right? So it's your duty to help her be Krishna conscious if she leaves her body somehow or other. But you still have to keep yourself strong by keeping in the sangha of devotees. But it is our duty. I mean, just recently, I mean, just 2 days ago, I visited my mother. You know, sannyasis also have mothers, if you didn't know. Anyways, we didn't just like spring from the lotus of Lord Vishnu, lotus navel of Lord Vishnu. So, you know, and you find the case like Bhakti Chirithmaraj, he took care of his mother when his mother was leaving the body. I actually told my mother that I said, when you're no longer able to take care of yourself, you know, I'll arrange to take care of you. And I'll also make sure you chant Hare Krishna. And she said, no, I'll always be independent. Anyway, so... So, yes, it's important. A devotee should not be heartless. Especially, you know, for parents or something like that. Of course, it's not that you have to do whatever they say, too. Like if your mother says, you know, don't chant Hare Krishna. Like when I joined the movement, my father said, you know, leave the Hare Krishna movement and I'll give you so much money and go into business with me. And I said, no thanks, Dad. But, you know, I was there at his funeral. I was there trying to help him. I was giving him prasadam all the time. And my mother, too, you know. And they become more favorable like that by doing that. So yeah, we do have a duty like that. We become heartless. I mean, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur criticized his disciples for not giving some charity to the beggars. He said, you think you're so good. I mean, that's a problem. That's a problem with being a devotee, is that we have the best philosophy. What's the problem? Because we think we're best. Isn't it? If you have the best philosophy, you can defeat anyone else with your philosophy, then you think I'm the best. You know, it's the thing that goes right to the head, like we were talking about before. And so we tend to lose our heart in dealing with people. But the devotional service is supposed to be executed with the subtle body. You know, it's devotion. Why do we say devotional service? This is not jnana yoga, sankhya yoga, mental yoga. It's bhakti yoga. And bhakti yoga means to serve Krishna and to see, unless we want to just be Kanishtha Adhikaris, but to see everybody, Krishna in everyone's heart. Everyone is a temple of Lord Vishnu. Everyone's walking around with Lord Vishnu in the heart, or Krishna in the heart. I mean, those of us who have done Sankirtan, book distribution, we realize that when we're talking to people, we actually pray that Lord Vishnu in the heart, please give them the intelligence to take the book. You know, because you're praying to Vishnu. Therefore, we should see we're all part of the same family. We're all family members. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanu pashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam atato navigi gupshate. That's from the Isipanishad. That one who is Krishna conscious, he sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmane. He doesn't hate anyone, but on the other hand, he loves everyone. So you have some responsibility for your grandmother. But, I mean, obviously, you have to save yourself first. You don't want to lose yourself or lose your Krishna consciousness in doing that. So it's take advice from the devotees how to do it. I mean, I've certainly helped my relatives when right before they passed away. I have my grandfather's a funny story. My grandfather had Parkinson's disease. You all know what Parkinson's disease is when you're shaking like this. And my grandmother was taking care of him. And he wanted to know what was going to happen after he left his body. So he came to me and he said, my dear grandson, what happens when I leave my body? And his wife said, shut up to him. Because she said, we don't ask questions like that. And then for the first time in his life, he said to her, you shut up. And she was shocked. You know, he never talked back to his wife his whole life. He was a submissive husband. So, and then I told him, I said, because Because I've given you some prasadam, and because you're connected with me and I'm supposed to be a devotee, you're going to have a better birth the next life. And then when my grandmother passed away, I snuck some Radha Kund water into her coffee. I mean, she didn't want it, but I just waited until she turned around and I had a little eyedropper full of Radha Kund water and I put in her coffee. And she turned back the other way, drank the coffee, and that was it for her. So we should always think of ways to help people. And devotees especially, we should be serving the Vaishnavas. I mean, if you serve a Vaishnava in leaving the body, you know, we're talking about hospice right now. Not that you should make a Vaishnava leave the body. That would be the wrong thing. Sometimes I tell devotees that I help devotees leave their bodies. That's called euthanasia, you know. No, I don't do that. I help them remember Krishna. So if you help a devotee think of Krishna at the time of death, guess what? They're going to be with Krishna pretty soon, and they're going to be able to tell Krishna who put in a good few, who helped them. That's what I usually tell people when they're getting ready to die. That, don't get scared, it's not like, I said, you know, when you see Krishna, put in a few good words for me. You know? And so, you know, you help a devotee, and Krishna's pleased. Krishna says, he who says he isn't, my devotee is not my devotee, Nyani Purana. But he who says he is a devotee of my devotee is my devotee. So remember that. Become a devotee of Krishna's devotee. That otherwise you're just Kanishtadikari. Kanishtadikari, you know, you see Krishna on the altar. He is on the altar. But that's it. Outside of the temple, no, Krishna's not there. Krishna is everywhere. Iswara sarvabhutanam pradesha arjuna tishtati brahmayanda sarvabhutani yantra rudani maya. So, any other questions? Yeah.
Maharaj, yesterday we had a discussion whether the relationships between devotees are eternal or are they just here and in the spiritual world we don't remember the devotees that we associate with in the material world.
Good question. Prabhupada said we have an ISKCON here, and we also have an ISKCON in the spiritual world. He's probably the only person who's not going back is Mr. Nair. He was the one who sold us the Bombay property and tried to cheat us from the Bombay, the Juhu property. Certainly our relationships are eternal, but the nature of the relationship will be different in the spiritual world. You won't look the same, and really you won't say, you know, look, like if I meet Gopinath in the spiritual world, he may be a Gopi instead of Gopinath. Anyway, so or he may be a rock or something. Or a cow. Who knows? So if I meet him in the spiritual world, I'm not going to say, hey Gopinath, is that you? But there'll be recognition. But it's not going to be that necessarily we'll remember this particular lifetime because there's no necessity. I mean, if there was a necessity, you know, Gopinath, remember when I was your guru? And you didn't listen to me? You remember that? Sorry, I'm picking on you. So it's not that. It really won't be like that. We basically, you know, people ask this question, when we go back to the spiritual world, we remember this material world. We won't want to remember so much of the material world. We may be aware of the Lord Chaitanya's movement in the material world, but, and certainly our friendships are eternal. I mean, sometimes, I mean, I know we've all had that experience, at least devotees have been removed for some time, that when we meet a devotee for the first time in this lifetime, there's some recognition, isn't there? There's some recognition. Hey, where do I know you from before? So, Maybe you were devotees together, like in the past life or something like that. You know, there's some recognition. I mean, I see that all the time. That, you know, I meet someone and it's just, yeah, I met you before. So there's recognition, and on the deep heart level, yes, there's recognition. But whether we'll remember someone's name, like I remember you in Finland, I doubt it. Because not many discussions between the gopis about Finland or about the earth. You don't read about that in Krishna book or in the Bhagavatam. Or even the, let's take the sages at Dandakaranya. The Dandakaranya sages, they were appreciating Lord Rama in a conjugal ras. You know, in other words. But Lord Ram wouldn't accept the worship in that ras because, as Lord Ram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead only has one wife, Eka Patibrata. So the next life, they became gopis, the Munichara gopis, they call them, Munichara gopis. And it's not that they said, Krishna, in our last life, you know, you rejected us. The mood of devotion continued, but it's not that they necessarily remembered that they were sages in Dandakaranya forest before. I mean, if you want to remember, you will remember. But I don't know if I really want to remember, if I'm so attached to this body and lifetime that I would want to remember. Of course, I want to remember my relationship with Prabhupada. And I want to remember all the devotees, yes. But they'll all look different. Next life or spiritual world, everyone's going to look different. Right? So, it's an interesting question. Any other questions or comments? Or problems? Yeah.
Maharaj, can I ask about a little bit about the mood? Because sometimes we are all devotees, but we have some different moods. We have some different types of practicing Krishna consciousness. So is that also eternal?
The moods that we have in this lifetime are not necessarily eternal. But on the other hand, we should appreciate other people's perspective or moods of Krishna consciousness. Just like in the government, you have your conservatives and liberals.
Mm.
So in Krishna consciousness, we have our conservatives and liberals, right?
Mm.
We have people who are very, very conservative. Like even among sannyasis, we have people extremely conservative.
Mm.
And then people extremely liberal. Like, I'm not telling you where I am. But I'm on the liberal side, you know, because we have this thing called Krishna West we're working on. Anyway, we'll discuss that. And sometimes the conservative people think the liberals are demons, and sometimes the liberals think the conservatives, they're just demons. Anyway, so it shouldn't be like that. We should appreciate there's different moods. You want to serve Krishna like that? That's wonderful. As long as you want to serve Krishna, you appreciate, I mean, even in the spiritual world, there's disagreements. How could deserve Krishna? But the central point is Krishna, pleasing Krishna. That's the whole point. Everyone in the spiritual world, from the gopis on down, is thinking of giving Krishna pleasure. Like, many times, like, if we have materialistic consciousness, we think of the gopis dancing with Krishna, and we think, oh, this is enjoyable, just like, you know, a boy and a girl, or whatever, a girl, you know, wants to enjoy with the boy wants to enjoy with the girl. But the gopis, when they hear Krishna's flute, it just makes them more enthusiastic to please Krishna. Not to enjoy in some lusty way, but they just want to please Krishna. Please the senses, Rishikena, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhaktu, Uchite. So we should appreciate if someone is enthusiastic to serve Krishna in any way, we should appreciate that mood. But that it's not that we're going to have the same mood in the spiritual world. I mean, just because I happen to be liberal in this world, I may be conservative in the spiritual world. What is conservative in the spiritual world mean? That's going to be the next question.
Yes.
Conservative in the spiritual world means I don't know if I should talk about this. But anyway, as a servant in the spiritual world, I mean, you're on Radharani's party, and you don't want to hear about Chandravali. Just like that story of Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami was chanting. He was in the Manasa Ganga area. He was chanting, and he was brought some nice milk by a young boy. And he asked the young boy, "Where are you from? Where did the milk come from?" And the young boy said, "I've just come from Sakhi Stali. Sakhi Stali is the place of Chandravali." And Sanatana Goswami is a great devotee of Srimati Radharani. So he began to chase after the boy with a stick to beat him. You know, so that's called conservative in the spiritual world. And also there's another story, Lord Chaitanya's pastime. With Sanatana Goswami and Jagannanda Pandit. Jagannanda Pandit was visiting Vrindavan, Sanatana Goswami was there too. And what happened is that Sanatana Goswami was wearing this cloth on his head like a turban that was given to him by a sannyasi named Mukunda Saraswati. And Jagannanda Pandit said, "You know, where'd you get this cloth from?" And Sanatana Goswami said, "I got it from this other sannyasi, Mukunda Saraswati or something." And when Jagannanda Pandit heard that he had gotten this cloth from someone, another sannyasi, who was Lord Chaitanya, he got so angry with Sanatana Goswami that he picked up some pots to hit Sanatana Goswami on the head. He never hit him, but he was just really angry. How could you accept something from another sannyasi other than Lord Chaitanya? So that's called conservative. So even in the spiritual realm, there's some conservative stuff. So, but as whether, you know, what our mood will be in the spiritual world, this is an interesting point. There's also Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I guess I should talk about this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this process of siddha pranali, and in regard to a word called aropya. Yeah, and sometimes we tend to project our particular mentality or imagine our particular situation in the spiritual world or imagine Ashtakaliya Leela. And that's not the process of understanding who we are in the spiritual world. It doesn't come from imagination. Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically states that. It comes from what's called a spurti, or direct perception or realization. In the Jiva Dharma, which I'm actually putting together a whole course on the Jiva Dharma right now, which is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's magnum opus. That means his most important work. In this work, he actually summarizes basically the whole process and teachings of Krishna consciousness. He summarizes the Nectar of Devotion, Ujjala Nilamani, and basically all the other books of the Goswamis. And it summarizes the process of how to realize one's spiritual identity. So one shouldn't project, or that's called aropya, projecting one's mentality upon this spiritual world. It's called imposition. The direct translation of that word is imposition. You impose your mentality. And it doesn't work like that. Anyway, so yeah, we don't know what it's going to be like in this, what our mentality. It will be revealed. You will get a direct perception. Prachaksha bhagamam dharmyam shushukam kartamavyam. Krishna says this in the 9th chapter of the Gita. Direct perception by realization. Prachaksha. Aksha means to see. Prachaksha means to directly see. Bhagamam dharmyam shushukam kartamavyam. So any other questions? Comments? Questions? You're videoing the whole thing? What are you going to do with it? Right. Facebook, YouTube.
What's the Facebook? Distribute in ether.
What?
Distribute in ether.
Ah, in the ether. You can put it on YouTube and give me the link to it. Yeah, that would be good. Any other questions or comments? No?
Prabhupada.
Oh,
what? I was just interested to hear your realization. What you say is, makes a lot of sense in terms of we should just be enthusiastic to support any devotee who wants to serve Krishna.
Yeah.
But many times people in the conservative mindset, they feel like, no, this is so dangerous. This will lead us down a path which will destroy what Prabhupada has given, and it's my job, you know, to stop it. That's, you know, it's not beneficial to support someone who's going off, and therefore I have to prosecute that. So how do you deal with that kind of move?
That's an interesting question. That's why us liberals are better than everyone else. No, I'm just, that's a joke. That's a joke. My understanding, based upon empathy, is that you go to the person who has that particular conservative stance. And you appreciate why they're saying that. They're saying that because they want to protect the integrity of Prabhupada's society. I mean, it's actually if you appreciate and understand them, then you can work together. Then they will actually accept you more. If you can go to someone who has that conservative stance and say, you know, I really appreciate this, you want to keep everything connected with Prabhupada. Because their motivation is good. Appreciate their motivation. And once you appreciate their motivation, then you can find a way to work with them. I mean, I've seen that recently in this whole exchange we had about Krishna West and the GBC. Because I was in the middle of it. I'm the GBC for Krishna West, anyway. And he had, you know, it was Sridhananda Maharaj who started Krishna West, but you know, somehow or other I got appointed to be the GBC of it. So basically in the beginning I just had to, you know, fight everybody off, you know. Didn't work very well. I got beaten up. So then ultimately, you know, we came to the point of just appreciating the other person for wanting to protect Prabhupada's movement. And it is important. We don't want to become so liberal that anything goes. You know, that anything goes in Krishna consciousness, that you could wake up at any time in the morning, you can chant any number of rounds, you can grow your hair like this. You know, we don't want to become so liberal. Like that's it. So if both sides appreciate the motivation of the other side, then I think people can work together. But the problems come when we demonize people. Actually, the problems come even when we call someone a conservative or a liberal. Because basically, everyone's trying to please Prabhupada and protect Prabhupada's movement and spread Prabhupada's movement. So if we just like call someone a conservative, then we're seeing them in a derogatory fashion, if you happen to be a liberal. Rather than seeing them as an individual, a sincere Vaishnava. I mean, basically everyone I know in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, every GBC member, and practically every devotee is, you know, very, very sincere, trying to please Krishna to the best of their ability. And if we appreciate like that, people will reciprocate, and I don't think there'll be so much conflict at that point. So that's how I would prescribe or advise to work with people who take a more conservative stance in Krishna consciousness. Because we do have to protect the integrity of Prabhupada's movement, because who knows, like, if we get too liberal 20 or 30 years from now, you know, what the movement will look like. So there has to be some standards. So, any other questions? when everyone's so quiet. It's like Finland here.
When you was reading this Mataji, did she have any experiences of Krishna?
She was always with Krishna. She was the most Krishna-conscious person I've ever seen passing away. I mean, her and Guru Govinda Maharaj. I've been with both of them when they passed away. And she was smiling. Most of the time, if you learn about hospice, taking care of people who are leaving their bodies, most of the time they come to a point where they're just like depressed, and then at a certain point they're fighting it. We had another case where I was helping someone leave their body, and she was saying, I'm going to fight it. I'm not going to give in to death. And then they ultimately come to the point of surrendering, you know. So what I've seen in many cases, actually there were two recent cases where I had to tell people, you know, Krishna's waiting, just relax, go, it's time to go. You know, your body's not serving you anymore. But in the case of Anarupa, she didn't go through any of those stages. She was always Krishna conscious. She didn't go through, you know, the standard phases that people always go through when they're leaving their bodies. She was just like blissful the whole time. She's glowing and blissful. An amazing experience. Amazing experience. Has anyone here met Mama Rupa?
Yes.
Yeah, you went there. Isn't that your experience too? Yeah, she was smiling the whole time. No fighting, not resentful. Completely Krishna conscious. And went back to God. That's an unusual case. Most of us, you know, we go through different stages. You know, there'll be, if one doesn't have full faith, there'll be doubts. You know, is Krishna really real? What's going to happen at the time of death? Why are you doing this? Anger? Why are you doing this to me, Krishna? You know, I've served you my whole life. I've been a sannyasini, you know, I preach, distributed so many books, and now you've done this to me? I hate you. You know, people do go through these stages. And then finally, I'm going to fight, I'm not going to die. And then you do die. All of us. So she didn't go through any of those stages. That's faith. In fact, she had so much faith that she had terminal cancer, but she decided to fast until she left her body. She actually made that conscious decision not to leave the body because of the cancer just eating away and causing its extensive pain, but to actually just, that's a Vaishnava's prerogative. Wonderful, isn't it? It was like seeing King Parikshit leaving his body. And with Guru Govinda Maharaj was very ecstatic too. But Guru Govinda Maharaj was talking about Lord Jagannath, the mood of separation from Vrindavan. Lord Jagannath was experiencing, and the gopis experienced when they, during Rath Yatra. And during that talk, he just went into Vyavachari Bhava, you know, symptoms of ecstasy. And he opened his mouth and you could see the soul leave his body. And his disciples were holding the picture of his deities in front of him. And they were massaging his heart at the same time and chanting Hare Krishna, and he left his body in such a way. So there's some pretty amazing experiences I've had with people leaving their bodies. Yeah, the point I'm making is you should serve the Vaishnavas in any condition, whether they're leaving their bodies or not. Don't wait till they leave their bodies. You know, serve them prasadam. I remember my godbrother Bhaktatirtha Maharaj, when it was time for the Mayapur festival, he was always there serving the other devotees. He'd be taking the the pots of prasadam around and serving everybody, even though he was, you know, he's sannyasi and exalted devotee, but he'd be serving everybody. So that's an example we should follow. Okay, I think we have to end now. It's time to serve prasadam. Don't want to make the Vaishnavas fast. Especially we have some sweets for Gopinathas. Okay, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.